In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
One of the things every voter who is registered with a party needs to know is that it is different voting in the primary in May than in November's general election. In the general, you're voting for the candidate you want to win that office. But it's different in the primary. It's a strategic vote. You're voting for the candidate you think would be best able to beat the candidate from the other team. Sometimes that might be your candidate that you really like. Sometimes that might be a candidate that you personally like less, but you think has a better chance of winning against the other team and their candidate. Because the primary is about party, your team. With your vote, you are trying to give your team the best shot at winning against the other team. Primaries can be messy, and that's okay, to a point. And this is where Republicans, I think more so than Democrats, too often get it wrong because we tend to be independent thinkers. While you want to support your candidate to win, you don't want to savage the other candidate so badly that if that other candidate wins instead of your personal choice, that you end up sabotaging their chances in the general against the Democrat. Case in point, when Monica Wiebe ran for Senate, a certain Oregon pro-life organization had their candidate they wanted and had donated heavily to in the past when he was in the legislature and had promised to support him if he ran for U.S. Senate. And that would have all been fine if it had stopped there. But despite Wiebe being a Catholic and a pro-life pediatric surgeon who literally operated on babies while still in the womb to save them so moms did not have to abort them, that organization attacked her as pro-abortion in the primary. Because as a doctor, she made exceptions for babies who could not be saved because there was absolutely nothing that could be done medically to save them. So despite agreeing with her on 90% or more of pro-life issues, that organization savaged her in the primary so badly they harmed her chances in the general. After she won the primary, they never even endorsed her, not even a recommend, despite the fact that she was running against one of the most anti-life Democrats, Jeff Merkley. They just stayed silent. Perhaps because they had attacked her so badly that they couldn't go back on what they said without looking like they'd lied about her. Now who, as a U.S. senator, was going to do a better job of supporting pro-life legislation? A Catholic, pro-life pediatric surgeon with hands-on experience saving children while still in the womb, who could have shared her knowledge with her fellow senators and perhaps persuade them to the truth about the unborn, perhaps even become a national champion for pro-life. Or Jeff Merkley, who thinks babies in the womb are just clumps of cells not living and thinks abortion is acceptable in pretty much every case. Fortunately, that pro-life organization seems to have learned its lesson and hasn't sabotaged anyone since, because it is always far better to get someone in office with whom you agree 90 or 80 or even just 60% of the time than someone whose policies are the exact opposite of what you want. Attack the other team, not your teammates. It's okay to support your choice. You should, but don't destroy your teammates. And after the primary, support who your team chose to be the starting quarterback. Don't trip him on the field or sit on the bench and refuse to play because your guy didn't get picked. To be a better voter, you need to be a better thinker. And that's the goal of today's show. And to help you be a better thinker, I'd like to welcome Greg Leo to the show. Greg previously served in the Reagan White House and has been a longtime political consultant, helping candidates and businesses navigate the choppy waters of politics both before and after elections. Greg, it is great to talk to you.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be on your show.
Yeah, you know, normally we're talking with you about the 4th of July, but Christine Drazen entering the race for Oregon just this week. And, you know, here we are. I'm already seeing some division among Republicans, even some posts that amount to if Drazen wins the primary, I'm not voting for her, which is pretty much a vote for Tina Kotek. So I hope that we can help people get focused on the Democrat who is destroying Oregon and not destroy Republicans' chances of winning in November. So let's start there. What would your advice be to help people focus on what matters, defeating Kotek or whomever the Democrats run?
Well, in the Republican primary, voters should nominate the most electable Republican. So the most likely Republican to win in the general election. That's how we can turn Oregon around and elect somebody who can truly govern. So, there in the Reagan administration, we had one of Ronald Reagan's 80-20 rules, which is that if you can agree with somebody 80% of the time, they're an ally. They're not a 20% traitor. So, you know, everybody's got to take a look at the candidates and say, who's the most electable Republican? Can I agree with them at least 80% of the time? And hopefully we can all coalesce around one Republican who can be our next governor.
Yeah. You know, like I said, my opener there, even if you can agree with somebody 60% of the time, you're going to be far better off when it comes to your particular issues. So as far as, let's actually look back in 2022, since I mentioned Christine Drazen has entered the race. In 2022, there were 19 candidates, the top five of which in order of finish in the primary was Christine Drazen, Bob Tiernan, not too far behind, Stan Pulliam, Bridget Barton, and Bud Pierce. But like I said, there was 19 candidates, and Drazen didn't win by much. If you combine the vote totals for both Bob Tiernan and Stan Pulliam, that candidate would have beaten Drazen. So
it was a really good field. And just of that list of people, there are a lot of good people there. You know, of course, I worked for Bob Tiernan. I like Bob, you know, but Bob didn't have legislative experience. Christine did, you know. Stan Pulliam, you'll never find a better Republican. The guy is smart. He's hardworking. He would have been great. I mean, Bridget Barton, with all of her policy expertise, really a great field. But in this case, I think that the stakes are really high for Oregon.
Yes.
We definitely need to have somebody who can win.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know that we can survive another round of Democrats at the top. So who's in it as of Thursday evening, as far as Republicans are concerned? It's Daniel Bethel, Christine Drazen, Kyle, I'm not sure how you say his last name, Dyke. Patrick Kopke-Hales, and Robert Newman, who I think is a businessman up in the San Diego Canyon. I don't know Patrick Kopke-Hales at all, or Kyle. You know, let's just maybe narrow things to Daniel and Christine, because I think right now they are definitely at the top two.
Yeah.
So let's start.
It seems like there's three kind of vanity candidates in that list who have no background, have not ever been elected to an office. And then, you know, Daniel Bethel, of course, is, you know, a popular, Marion County commissioner who has been elected. And Christine Drazen, of course, being our party's nominee. And I think she's done a stellar job in the legislature as being, you know, the opposition to Tina Kotek and the Democrats, and really carrying a good message. And especially I give her credit for the work she did on the transportation bill. She was a strong, clear voice for the, you know, people or the taxpayers who are paying but not necessarily getting services. So, you know, I think it's really down to, you know, Danielle and Christine. And I think they're both strong candidates, but I would have to say Christine, I think, has a bit more experience and almost made it last time. And we could certainly use her help in Mahonia Hall.
Yeah. Well, she certainly has probably more name recognition because she did run last time. Is there anybody else that you've heard might run? I've heard some rumors that Chris Dudley is thinking about it.
Yes. And Chris Dudley, I think, will be speaking soon at the Reagan dinner in Hillsboro. And a lot of people like Dudley remember his run for governor before. He ran a very credible campaign, but he's not been in the state for the last several years and, you know, doesn't have the exposure that Christine Drazen has had.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I've heard rumors that maybe there's been conversations to try to figure out which one should go ahead. And I would think probably Christine Drazen worked that out before her announcement would be my guess, but I don't know anything specific.
Yeah, quite possibly. I like the idea of Chris Dudley running, but like you said, he hasn't been in the state lately, so he hasn't felt firsthand the brunt of living under Democrats, but he's got that star power, and I often have felt that the Republicans need somebody with that, just that little extra juice of star power, so we'll have to see. So
he was good on the stump, too. When he would, he gave a good speech. Of course, being that tall and that famous, he did have charisma and did, you know, attract a lot of people. So a credible candidate, and it's good to have choices. But we need to have a pact, all of us Republicans, that whoever wins the nomination, we all get behind. I hope there's something like a unity movement.
That would be nice.
After the primary, so we don't lose this opportunity to really set Oregon back on a better path.
Yeah, that would be nice. Okay, it is time for a break. The argument is that Republicans have never tried a true conservative candidate in the general election. Could a conservative win in Oregon? We'll talk about that next with Greg Leo. How do Republicans win the governorship here in Oregon? It's been 38 years since Vicatia, and nearly 40 years of uninterrupted Democrats in office has led to the demise of Oregon. Everything is upside down. We are at or nearly at the bottom on lists like best education, economic outlook, etc. And conversely, at the top of lists like highest crime, highest gas prices, highest home prices, and things like mental health problems. Greg Leo is our guest today, a longtime political consultant and former communications director for the Oregon Republican Party. And so, Greg, I mentioned going out there that the argument is that Republicans have never tried a true conservative running in the general. Could a conservative win in Oregon, do you think?
I think we did have a true conservative in Dennis Richardson, who was a spectacular gubernatorial candidate. I say that I worked on the campaign. He was really good about controlling the size and role of government, and of course had really earned his chops in the legislature doing audits on various state agencies. And so he was a very close runner to be elected. And I think anybody can argue that Dennis wasn't conservative, because he was.
Yeah. Well, and I think I think you bring up a good point, because it kind of depends on how you define a conservative.
Yes.
Are you talking a fiscal conservative, or are you talking a social conservative? I think that depends. Do you think somebody that is both a fiscal and a social conservative could win in Oregon? Because it seems like Dennis didn't. He was there on the financial side of on the fiscal side. I mean, it seems like he was a little softer on the social side. So could a true dyed in the wool on every way that you would define a conservative, would they win in Oregon, do you think?
I think you could. And, you know, it's a different world now. We have a lot more unaffiliated voters. We have a lot of pocketbook voters who really have seen the growth of government, which is just, you know, exponentially increased in cost. And so a lot of, voters, both registered Republicans and non-affiliateds, I think would like to see the cost of government controlled and taxes lowered. So we have a lot of problems right now with taxes, as we saw in the recent transportation bill debate. And could a conservative step in and do that? And the answer is yes, I think they could.
As I recall, in the last election, Drazen kind of ran from some of the conservative issues. And I don't feel like she ever had a really good answer for abortion, because if you remember the time the Dobbs decision was coming out, and that really fired up the Democrat base. So let's say for a moment that Drazen wins the nomination in the primary. How would you advise her to run in the general?
I'd have a very early discussion with Oregon Right to Life, and make sure that Right to Life knows that the governor of Oregon doesn't determine the Right to Life issue, but have an understanding that she needs to reach out to voters of all points of view on this. And then I think there's certain standards within the Right to Life issue where you can find a position which is, you know, not contrary to what Oregon Right to Life wants, but is open enough in order to reach out to many voters who are not motivated solely by that issue. And then the idea is that it's the size of government, it's taxation, it's the inability to manage. The poor job that's been done on housing, transportation, the extensive growth of government, that need to be the issues of focus, not the divisive social issues.
Yeah. So Danielle Bethel is the Marion County Commissioner. She was, I think, originally appointed to finish out a term and then won a term outright. Mm-hmm. She won re-election here recently. So she's kind of going with the, I've got executive experience because she's a county commissioner. Is that enough to build on, you think, to build a statewide campaign?
I don't think so, personally, because in watching what a governor does, a lot of it is legislative. So I think you have to understand the culture of the building, and you got to know the individuals in both parties who are, you know, essential to the legislative process. So a lot of what the governor does is, you know, articulate a vision and then get support from both parties. Hmm. And we've seen even Tina Kotek at times reach out to Republicans, although she did a terrible job on the transportation issue.
Yes.
But the idea is that whoever our next governor needs to be needs to really understand the legislative process and need to know the players. So this is no place for on-the-job training. It takes people that really know their way around the Capitol to really be effective as the next governor.
So let's say that you happen to land on Danielle Bethel's campaign. How would you advise her?
I would say Danielle has done a very good job as a Marion County commissioner. I think she's got some charisma, and you know, she's really good, I think, at the grassroots level. So I think she's a bit of a populist candidate, and she would probably position Christine Drazen as a pro-business, more business-oriented Republican, whereas Danielle Bethel is a populist kind of grassroots you know, conservative. And so there is a difference there, I think. Probably a little bit easier for Danielle on the social issues, but, you know, may not have the business credibility that Christine Drazen would have in Salem.
So those are what you see as Bethel's weaknesses. What would you see as Drazen's weaknesses, and how would you advise her around those?
Yeah. So she's been our partisan warrior and really carried the Republican standard on, like I say, the transportation bill. The pushback that she has given to the governor has been really a credit, I think, to our party. And so that's good. But it also comes with some cost. There will be people who do not think that that's been playing a positive role and that she could have been more effective in getting legislative gains. So Christine needs to tell her story about what she would do, what her vision is of being governor, and how she can attract people to that vision.
Yeah, and attracting people is what I'd like to talk to you about in the next segment there. Everyone stay with us. We're going to take a break here. We're talking with Greg Leo, a longtime political consultant, to get his thoughts on the primary and how Republicans might just win in the general. But it's going to take more than just Republicans. Greg Leo is our guest today. No, it is not the 4th of July. Besides being our guest for our annual 4th of July show, Greg is also a longtime political consultant, and we are tapping into that experience to get his take on saving Oregon from yet another Democrat governor and supermajority, which has not gone well for Oregonians. So, Greg, I talked about wooing voters because that, of course, is the issue, is that if Republicans had their way and they were the only party in Oregon that could elect somebody, we would win every time. But somehow we need to be able to reach across the aisle, and that is not always easy for us here in Oregon. So how does whichever candidate that wins the Republican nod for the governorship, how do they reach across the aisle to bring over Democrats and especially those NAVs?
I think we need to, our candidate, our successful Republican gubernatorial candidate, needs to articulate a positive vision of Oregon. So it can't be just complaining about how bad the Democrats are. That hasn't worked. And frankly, I think a lot of voters, especially this growing number of non-affiliated voters, are not inspired by that. The vision that we need to have is an Oregon where kids are truly educated, streets are safe, we don't have the exposure to all the social problems like we see in Portland, that housing is, you know, actually solved with free market economics, not with some kind of subsidy or issuing people tents, and that, you know, we get core services supported. And that's where the transportation bill was so important, because, you know, the Democrat transportation bill got loaded up with so many different things that it really didn't stick to the core values of paving the roads, operation and maintenance, plowing snow, the things that Oregonians expect their government should do for them. So articulating a better, more positive vision of government that is right-sized, that doesn't tax a person the way that we've seen the current taxation happened during this time of really bad, you know, inflation.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned about the economics of things, and that has been a problem with Tina Kotek, is the economy is not doing really well here in Oregon. And unfortunately, you know, Trump is out there. He's making these great deals. He's bringing back literally trillions of dollars in investments for the United States. But unfortunately, when it comes to Oregon, we are orange man bad. And it could be a very interesting year next year as all of those economic developments that Trump is doing start kicking in next year. That could have a real effect here in Oregon. Do you think that we will start looking at these other states and saying, hey, they're cashing in and we're stuck here with Democrats that are preventing any of that economic activity here? I would think that would benefit Republicans in that situation.
Yeah, I think so too, Mark. And it's like I can remember this when Jimmy Carter was president and Ronald Reagan was starting to ascend. And we had a slogan, and that was, if you've had enough, vote Republican. Mm. And I think that slogan might work well here in, you know, 2026. If you've had enough with, you know, all the problems that have happened with Portland, you know, with all the drugs, the fentanyl, you know, the fact that government is more and more money but accomplishes less and less, it's just out of sync with what people want for their families and their communities. And so if you've had enough, vote Republican. And it's our opportunity here to articulate a better vision for Oregon going forward.
Well, and I totally agree with that. And I like that. That's a pretty good slogan. So anybody listening out there, there you go. That's your slogan. And another top issue for Oregon, it seems like crime is near the top, and yet they keep voting in Democrats that have been very weak on police. Do you think now that Antifa has had their camps broken apart there in front of the ICE building and they seem to be under control, do you think Democrats will look at that and say, hey, you know what? The Democrat policies didn't stop that. That was Republican policies. Will they connect those dots?
I do. And I think this is a very conflicted political environment. But when it gets right down to it, it's going to be pocketbook issues that people vote. Because, you know, as James Carville famously said, it's the economy, right? And so, you know, even though there have been a lot of atmospherics about, you know, ICE coming to Portland and all of that, I do think when it gets right down to it, people will vote their pocketbooks. Is my life better now than it was in the past? Can it be better in the future with leader that right-sizes the role and the cost of government?
Yeah. Well, speaking of cost of government and your background there as both the communications director for the ORP and then also going all the way back to the Reagan White House where you served, yeah. You've got a speech coming up here in the Capital City Republican Women's Group. It's coming up in November. So what are you going to be talking about there?
I am going to be talking about the American Revolution and the celebration, the 250th celebration of our freedom and our liberty, won, you know, by the blood of, you know, of patriots. And so, as you know, Ken Burns is, you know, launching his American Revolution PBS series later this month. The whole attention of the country is going to pivot towards, you know, the revolutionary founding of our republic. So I get an opportunity on the 13th of November to speak to the Capital City Republican women. For me, this is kind of like a homecoming. As you know, I worked with Diana Evans during the Reagan campaign. Yes. And there's so many dear friends there that I feel like learning more about our revolutionary history and the principles of our, you know, founding fathers and government will help inspire people today to, you know, play a more positive and direct role in our democracy.
Yes.
Our democratic republic.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I'm excited about the speech, and I hope it'll be a catalyst for, you know, patriots throughout Oregon.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll certainly be there. So real quick, we only got about a minute here with you. America's 250th, the planning for that is already underway. Are there things that people can be getting involved in now?
Yes. In the Salem area, we are planning at the Willamette Heritage Center a gala, which will be happening in April and mid-April. And it's going to be a great celebration of our 250 years as our republic. And we would like to invite everybody in Marion County and then Salem area and Polk County to come to the Willamette Heritage Center to our gala, which will focus on America 250 and, you know, just the excellent celebration of the founding of our republic.
Yeah. Well, I was there for the 200th anniversary. That was really exciting as a kid. But even as a kid, I just remember being so excited about all of that. I'm really looking forward to this next year. That'll be awesome. So, Greg, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Mark. Always happy to come on the program.
Chuck Weiss is a trained scientist, and we love to have him on to get his insights. He has also become a bit of a political activist, and among other things, he has been directly involved in several election integrity lawsuits here in Oregon. So as far as being a better thinker when it comes to voting, Chuck is a great one to talk with. Chuck, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be on, Mark. Glad to help you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we wanted to have you on to talk about the race. We are a year away from the governor's race here in Oregon, but the primary is first. That's coming up in May, of course. And just this week, Christine Drazen decided to enter the race. There was a lot of speculation that she would, in fact, do that. And sure enough, she did. But it's not exactly been smooth sailing so far. I'm seeing a lot of division from people on social media and whatnot, because there was an awful lot of people that did not like her last time. I know you and I both didn't like her very much when she was in the primary, for sure. But I'd like to read you this. This is something that I found on Facebook, and I think is pretty emblematic. And I'll withhold the name there, but this person says, "Oregon D's don't have to tear down the Republican candidate. The Republicans will do it for them. I had one who advocated voting for Betsy Johnson last time because Drazen wasn't conservative enough. Making them understand that first you have to win an election before you can do anything is apparently impossible." So, like I said, I think that's pretty emblematic of what I'm seeing, where there's all of these divisions and people have already staked out their positions. And it's like she's going to have a hard time moving people off of those. So just kind of start there. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I sympathize, like you and I were talking about, with wondering whether or not she's going to be a truly conservative candidate in the Republican Party. As we discussed before, and I'm not sure if we did it on the program or not, but we had a discussion about her position that she took after the 2020 election when Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden. And she made a public statement that she thought that Joe Biden won the election fair and square. And I thought when she made that comment, with the information that was available that she certainly could have digested, she certainly should not have made that comment. There was plenty of indication that the election was rigged. I firmly believe today that it was, more than ever, because now a lot of the initial evidence we had looked at after 2020 was scrutinized to the point to where we can pretty much safely conclude there was definitely voter fraud in that election, and it was stolen from Donald Trump. And he has said this publicly now many times because he's had a chance to look at the same things we did. So she made that comment, and I thought it was totally outrageous. But she did, and she believed that. And so it does call into question how good of a leader she'll be when she's behind the curve on a lot of this stuff, or she's too scared to jump into the fire and admit we have a problem not only nationally, but we have a big problem in Oregon, because at the same time, we had our lawsuits going on in this state regarding election integrity, and I haven't heard her say a word about it. In fact, she may have even said that she feels Oregon's elections are safe, like a lot of these Democrats have, and they know darn well they're not. They've done everything they can to obstruct and to make it difficult to have fair elections in the state of Oregon right now because of vote by mail and all the rules that they made around it.
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how she handles that going forward. I know that when she was running previously, it was in the shadow of the whole January 6th thing and the Russia collusion and stuff. And, you know, any of us, all of us, I should say, have imperfect information at any given time. We don't know everything. And I wonder now how she will handle that going forward, because now it's pretty clear that the Russia collusion was a complete hoax. And the January 6th thing, that is looking more and more like that was a total setup, staged to denigrate Trump and bring him down in the public view and all the rest, versus what he's doing now, which is some tremendous good all around the world with peace deals, certainly with all of the economic activity. He's bringing in trillions of dollars of economic activity. So it'll be interesting to see where she goes from that. And one of the things that I look for in the candidate is whether or not they're willing to admit that they made a mistake. That's actually how you build trust. Everybody has to realize they're not perfect. They have imperfect information. They may not have all the facts. And if they're willing to say, hey, I got it wrong last time, that I support that. And I want to be clear as in this show is I'm not advocating that people blindly support any candidate just because they're a Republican. I mean, you really have to ask who is better for my issues. And sometimes, as you and I both know, the Republican would make a worse choice. You know, when Newt Bueller ran, he ran as Democrat light. But he was also a big supporter of climate change. And because of that, I think he would have pulled the Republican legislators along behind him and passed even worse climate regulations than we ended up with. So in that case, you really do have to focus in who is better for my particular issues and the things that I believe in and that I want to see accomplished. If a candidate gets into office, that's the person I will vote for, the better of those two choices.
Well, I would tend to agree with that. We're all human. We all make mistakes. There's no such thing as a perfect individual. So it is important for somebody, if they didn't get it the first time, that by now, with what's available, they would come forward and say, you know what, I said that back in 2020, and I reversed my position. The election wasn't fair, and Joe Biden stole it from Donald Trump, which is the truth. He did. No question about it now. So, yes, that is important to look at, and I agree with you about the Republican Party in general. The problems that we've had with them in the past is that I think this goes back to election integrity, to tell you the truth, because it's not a coincidence, in my opinion, that ever since we went to vote by mail in the state of Oregon, which brings us back to about 1990, we have not elected a Republican governor since. And I've gone to the Republican conferences. I've listened to a lot of what they've had to say since then. And increasingly over time, because we keep losing the governor races, that their attitude has become, well, if we want to have a successful outcome and get a Republican back in the governor's office, we've got to start being more like the left. And we can't run true conservatives anymore. Oregon is sort of, quote unquote, outgrown them. We need to shift with the times to get power. And to me, that is a ridiculous, stupid, just almost unconscionable argument to make. You can't abandon your principles just over some sort of suspicion that you think there may be a problem with that. You have to take a closer look at things. And I think that the fraud that's involved in vote by mail has kept a lot of the Republicans from getting into the governorships in Oregon. And the best example of that was back in 2010. That's what really convinced me we had a problem that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, with the Chris Dudley race. Yeah.
Let me
go ahead
Dudley
and interrupt
race.
There because we'll pick this up after the break. Everyone stay with us. We'll come back with Chuck Weiss talking about the candidates already in the race and get his thoughts on how to give the Republicans the best chance. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Chuck Weiss. He's a trained scientist, and we'd love to get his insights on things, being a great thinker on everything from science to politics, which he has become more and more involved in here. And so, Chuck, we were talking at the end of that break, going into that break, that there's this notion that a conservative can't win in Oregon. And we actually talked about that a little bit with our previous guest, Greg Leo. And there's this notion that, well, if we have a conservative run, a true conservative, both socially and also on the fiscal conservative side of things, that they can't win. And so they need to be more like a Democrat. And there's different fields of thoughts on that. You know, we discussed earlier about Newt Bueller, and he ran as Democrat light. But my thinking at that point was, well, why would you vote for Democrat light if you could just vote for Democrat and get the real thing? So,
well, that's exactly, yeah.
So, go ahead.
That's exactly right. And that's why Newt Bueller lost. I mean, I was against him on his climate change nonsense because me and some other physicists in the area tried to visit him personally to talk about that. And he put us off to his executive staff instead of just meeting with us personally. And they just blew us off. They didn't care. And he just went on his way promoting this climate hysteria nonsense. which we could have shown him was wrong and given him the ammunition he would need to fight this in any debates, but he chose not to do it. And at that point, I just thought, this guy is just, he doesn't have it. He doesn't get it. He's not astute enough, in my opinion, to have been governor. And I predicted back then that he's going to lose this race. He's just not with it. And of course, he did.
Well, he lost it. And one of the reasons why I didn't support him over the Democrat, well, I didn't support either of them, because he didn't seem to understand that climate change was a massive funding model for the left. Whenever you pass a climate change policy, you're funding Democrats. And so why would you do that? And my concern was because he had Republicans in the legislature at the time that were against that. It could have been that had he won, he would have been able to pull those Republicans over who had been standing in the way when there's a Democrat in office. And so that, to me, was the real danger. Plus, he was a big supporter of universal health care. He wanted that instituted here in Oregon. And those were two of my big issues at the time, and I just couldn't support that. As far as this notion that a conservative can't win, there's a little bit of logic to that in the sense that when it comes to politics, it's not like a speedboat. You can't turn that on a dime. It has to turn like the Queen Mary. You have to kind of nudge it in the direction that you want to go. So I can understand why people think that a tried and true conservative Republican just can't win here, because it's such a big leap going from very far left Democrats who have won here in Oregon to a conservative Republican. But, you know, nobody can say that for sure one way or the other. But at this point, I'm not sure of the candidates so far. I think Danielle Bethel is probably far more conservative than Christine Drazen, but I don't know that she's got the traction. Do you have any other thoughts on any of the other candidates that you've seen, like Danielle?
I haven't had a chance to really study them in great detail yet. I'm going to get around to doing that.
Well, you've got 6 months, so.
Yeah. The main focus I've had is Drazen. She seems to be the favorite right now as far as the one that they're going to run with. And so if I had any message I would give her, it's that she's got to be a true blue conservative. She's got to hold to those values. But even bigger than that with me is she's got to come around like any other candidate we would run, whether it's her or somebody else. And she's got to come clean and admit we have a serious problem with our elections in Oregon and make it part of her platform to vow to clean it up. And a lot of them run away from that, just going, oh, I don't want to be called an election denier. It's the same thing with the climate change nonsense. If they jump on that and support fighting climate change nonsense, which is rampant in this state, they're scared, of course, all those special interests are going to turn against them, which is probably true. But I think, on the other hand, people are getting so fed up with it, with the cost of all this ridiculous climate change legislation that started with Kate Brown and goes all the way up through Tina Kotek, Keith Wilson, the mayor of Portland supports it. And the cost to Oregonians in energy is just going through the roof because of these people. And the hell of it is we get nothing for all this money it's costing people, and they're beginning to see this now. All of these climate programs are a complete fraud. They are a waste of money and time. They will make no difference to atmospheric CO2 or the climate, and the scientists promoting it at the universities know darn good and well that is the truth as well. And guess what? They've all clammed up now, and they don't want to talk about it.
No.
But she needs to talk about it if she's going to run. And then she needs to say, we're going to clean up this election mess in Oregon, and we need to get rid of vote by mail and go back to in-precinct ballots like we did before 1990. And that's the only way you're going to clean it up. As you know, there are more registered voters in the state of Oregon right now than there are citizens.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with that. Let's actually take a break a little bit early because I got some big loaded questions here for you. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Chuck Weiss talking about the upcoming Republican primary after this. In our final segment now with Chuck Weiss, he's a trained scientist, a fearsome global warming debunker, and he's also a political activist here in Oregon. He's gotten involved in several election integrity lawsuits, among other things. And so, Chuck, I wanted to take a break there because you had mentioned kind of an important issue here, which is this notion that we've got these ballooning power costs, utility costs here in Oregon, and in large part that's due to this enforced green energy that is driving up costs for everybody. It's kind of funny that when they were first putting those in, they were saying, just like Obamacare, that gosh, costs are going to go down because it's free energy that we're just converting from the sun or the wind and all the rest. But instead, costs have skyrocketed, and it's going to get worse as long as we keep going down that green energy path. And it also means we're going to get squeezed out of some of these AI developments, because AI takes a tremendous amount of energy. You can't run it off a windmill. And so we need more power sources. And I don't think Oregon is going to be willing to do that if another Democrat gets into office. But then on top of that, we got Bill Gates, lo and behold, saying, gosh, you know, we're not going to all die from climate change. And I can't imagine that you somehow think, oh, gosh, Bill Gates is suddenly all on board with this climate change is just nonsense.
Well, I think Bill Gates has been all about the money. He saw, at least he perceived to see, a huge amount of money to be made with these green investments. And I think he was hoodwinked partially, at least, too, because some of this nonsense about climate change, I know how it all started. I was at Oregon State University when the whole department was transformed into a climate modeling institution from just instructing good meteorology and atmospheric science. And the output of all of that and the effort, I thought back then, was going to be a complete waste of time, because we already knew what the limitations of these models would be, and the results you'd get would be unreliable. But somebody started telling whoppers when all the money showed up, and they started lying about the skill of these models, and they ran with those, and the politicians grabbed a hold of the results and said, well, there's no other way that we can better assess what's going to happen to the climate rather than to trust these models. And the problem is, the models went against the founding principles without the scientists that ran them and invented them ever disproving the founding principles. And so that's where the rubber meets the road in science. And there's just been too many lies told about this for the sake of promoting the green energy falsehoods. And to the universities, unfortunately, that meant hundreds of millions of dollars. They have just gone to the bank with all of this money promoting climate hysteria. And it's disgusting, because science was definitely hurt by this whole thing. But that's where Bill Gates is coming from now. I think he's beginning to realize, hey, this isn't all what it was cracked up to be. And now he sees an opportunity financially to go with artificial intelligence. And like you said, you need a lot of power for this. And you're going to need nuclear power at the rate the artificial intelligence is being built to be able to support it. There's no way green energy will support this anywhere.
Nope.
And that's part of the reason why I think they're starting to abandon some of this now. But notice Oregon, though, like you said, doesn't want to let go of any of it. They're heavily invested in this in Oregon. And like I said, it's a complete fraud. It's a shameful, complete, disgusting fraud, and it needs to be shut down. The whole thing, from Kate Brown up through Tina Kotek, all of them. They're just—it's horrible what they've done and what they're doing now, and what it's costing Oregonians to live in this state because of their stupid policies that won't make any difference to anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a saying in politics: follow the money, and that usually refers to who's getting the money from the government, and that's certainly been the case with climate change and green energy. But it's also, in Bill Gates' case, it's not just who gets the money, but who makes the money. And I think that's what he's doing, is that he's seeing the writing on the wall that the Trump administration is not going to keep funding these green energy projects. He's not going to be giving away the tax credits and the grants and all the rest that they were getting. I mean, in just the two bills alone, the IIJA and the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, there was almost a full $1 trillion of giveaways for the left. And it was not going to stop with those, because there was no ceiling on those tax credits. I mean, you could have racked up literally trillions of dollars under those two bills. And it's just astonishing to think that we would be giving away that much taxpayer monies. But now that's all going away. So I'm glad to see Bill Gates is finally admitting that the climate change was, he hasn't come out and said it's a scam, but it's a scam.
Yeah, he's going to slowly kind of back away from it. I think, like I said, I think he's finally beginning to see, and I think the artificial intelligence community nudged him in that direction, that, hey, Bill, you got to take a look at this. It's not as sound a science as you once thought it might be. Because, you know, when you sit down and just listen to the half-truths that the scientists can tell you, if they're going to promote this, they can convince you pretty well that they're onto something and that there's truth in this. But if you get the whole story about how the atmosphere works and how water vapor dwarfs the effects of atmospheric CO2 with its hydrological cycle, you begin to see this is just a bunch of baloney. And so they show you the parts that they want to show you to make it look like it's real. We know that CO2 absorbs infrared radiation and it emits it, and it could have an effect to cause the climate to change if you took all the water off the planet, but then you'd be starting with a piece of frozen tundra. But they mix it up with all this other nonsense to be able to convince people that because of certain truths about carbon dioxide, it's evil, and it even went so far as to convince the U.S. Supreme Court that it's a pollutant. That was a horrible ruling they gave back then and needs to be reversed.
Yeah.
We can't live without CO2. Yeah. It's absolutely essential for life on planet
it's
Earth.
It's kind of funny how many people forget that from second grade biology. I remember learning that in second grade, that plants survive because they get carbon dioxide, which we just happen to exhale, and they make the oxygen that we need. So it's just pretty much insane. But unfortunately, so much of green energy and climate change has all been about the money. And
it's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's been a massive money making. And so if they want to keep doing that, I think what they need to do is to finally declare climate change as a religion, which it is, rather than science. And that way, if it is a religion, any donations would be fully tax deductible.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Chuck, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, I'm glad to help, Mark. We'll talk again, I'm sure, in the next few months as things heat up on the election.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I just pray that New York does not elect Zoran Mondami. That's going to be a disaster.
Yes, it will. But hopefully it sets the example of what not to do.
Yes, exactly.
And what not to do is far too often exactly what Oregon does, unfortunately. And I hope that will not be true of Republican Oregonians, that we set the example of what not to do. As I said to start the show, I'm already seeing a lot of divisions and things have only just started. If I could offer one word of advice on this, it's don't tear down the other Republicans. Focus instead on how your preferred candidate is better than the others, the positive things, instead of attacking the other candidates to say why they are worse. Those send two entirely different messages. Plus, if all you can say is why the other candidates are worse than yours and how terrible they are and everything they do wrong, then that implies your candidate is actually weak. Because if they were a good candidate with lots of positives, then you'd focus on those strengths rather than the negatives of all the other candidates. So I hope we can finish this race the way we started. Take it easy on our teammates, yes, hold them accountable, but let's not torpedo their chances in the general because they just might win. Or maybe think of it this way. Don't say things Democrats would want to use in their campaign commercials against Republicans. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.